From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Emerging artist tonight for the first couple hours. Later tonight, 90 seconds to live a life you love. Here's what's happening. First of all, our deepest condolences to the family members of those people who have been killed or injured and wounded in the two horrible shooting episodes over the weekend. Here's what's happening. Authorities announced that the massacre at a Walmart in El Paso, Texas, where a gunman opened fire, killing at least 20, wounding 26 others, is being investigated as a domestic terrorism case, and officials are looking into whether hate crime charges for the suspect, who has been already charged with capital murder, happens to be appropriate. The suspect has been identified by law enforcement as Patrick Crucius, a 21-year-old from Allen, Texas. Investigators were examining a manifesto that may have been written by the suspect that would indicate a hate crime. Very tragic. What's wrong with these people? So much hate, folks. So much. In Dayton, Ohio, the sister of the gunman in that deadly rampage in Dayton, Ohio, was among the nine killed during the early morning shooting at a very popular nightlife area that left dozens injured. The deputy director of the Dayton Police Department has identified the gunman as a 24-year-old Connor Betts. His sister, a 22-year-old Megan, was among the nine killed. Betts was killed by police less than a minute after he opened fire with a .223 caliber rifle in the streets of the Oregon District there in Dayton, Ohio. What a tragedy there. And again, our condolences to those victims, the family members, of course, and those injured. And, of course, the hate continues. In London, a teenager was arrested on attempted murder charges after a child was tossed from the top platform of the Tate Modern Art Gallery in London. The six-year-old is thrown from the 10th floor right now in critical condition, but bad, bad shape. Iranian Revolutionary Guards have seized an Iraqi oil tanker in the Gulf, which they said was smuggling fuel, and detained seven crewmen. It's a show of power and amid heightened tension with the West. Here's Dr. Jerome Corsi checking in with us. Jerry, the situation with Iran is going to blow up. I can feel it now.
It certainly seems that way, George. I mean, this is the third seizure of a oil tanker by Iran in the last few weeks. And Iran just seems to be determined to provoke a incident that will cause a war with the United States, because we've pulled out of the agreement that President Obama did with Iran, and we've imposed very severe sanctions, and it's hurting Iran. And Iran, I think, is trying to create an incident which will produce a regional war, which I think Iran believes will be in their favor.
Well, you know, what has been happening lately with Iran trying to, take and detain some of these oil tankers, just a matter of time, they're going to get to the wrong one and something's going to happen.
Well, I think that's right, George. I mean, 20% of the global oil consumption goes through the Straits of Hormuz right off the, this is in the Iranian, the Gulf of Iran, every day. And sooner or later, one of those is going to be an American ship. And some incident is going to occur where President Trump is going to feel compelled to respond with a military response. The danger of war is growing, I think, with Iran every day. And any day this could break out into a regional war or a global war, and Iran seems determined to provoke with an incident like the seizure of another oil tanker, an incident that will cause a U.S. military response, and we will be at war. I'm actually right now, George, recording the e-book from my 2005 Atomic Iran, because it turns out to be a book that's relevant today. I mean, I wrote that book almost now 15 years ago, but what I've written there, Atomic Iran 2005, is happening today.
It sure is. Jerry, keep this story on the top of your list and check in with us from time to time. Thank you, Dr. Jerome Corsi. Well, from credit card payments to student loans, debt is an inconvenient fact of life for many people. Despite being so common, many people feel the need to hide their outstanding debts from potential partners and love interests, according to a new survey of 2,000 adults in the United States. The survey found that about a quarter, 24% of the respondents, have lied to a new partner about their level of debt. The survey also revealed that many adults are deceptive about their financial situations in general. Well, the Federal Communications Commission has voted to approve laws to ban fraudulent text messages and international robocalls. They did that just a few days ago. The new rules, in effect, neutralize loopholes in the Truth in Caller ID Act, which banned domestic calls, but make it hard for the FCC to prosecute against perpetrators of these scams and text messages and international calls. But now the FCC can monitor and penalize what they call the bad actors, these types of schemes. Let's check in with Dr. John Curtis, onlinecolumnist.com. John, you think they can really crack down on these violators?
I don't think so, George. I think, you know, we've had these do not call lists that are out there. And what this enables, the FCC is really basically putting the onus onto the telecommunication companies. We're talking about Frontier or Verizon or AT&T. And they're saying, look, you can do it on your systematic level, develop the software by the end of the year, block these calls, these robocalls and robotechs for people. But realistically speaking, you know, this legislation is designed to provide an enforcement opportunity for the FCC. FCC does not have the staff. They do not have the resources, any more than a special counsel had the resource to go after, you know, the bad actors, the malign actors, you know, hacking into various places in the U.S. and elsewhere in St. Petersburg. So, well, it's good you can launch all these indictments and stuff. Where's the enforcement going to take place? But I don't think that it's going to really put much of a dent in the kind of harassment that I think most people feel on a daily basis, and the billions of these robocalls, basically, and the scams that are associated with them.
Thank you, John. We'll talk to you this week with some other issues. John Curtis, onlinecolumnist.com. It's very difficult to do a program after the tragedy this weekend. But we're going to escape for just a few hours tonight with some different kinds of programs for you. So I just want you to sit back and try to let your mind wander for just a little bit. I know it's very difficult for a lot of us to forget what has happened this weekend. But we're going to escape for just a few hours. Nick Pope up next with his work, The Indistinguishable from Magic, on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Our special guest tonight for the first couple hours, author, journalist, and personality Nick Pope, ran the British government's UFO project at the Ministry of Defense. He is now recognized as one of the world's leading authorities on UFOs, the unexplained, conspiracy theories, and fringe science. He's a regular contributor here on Coast to Coast. He's acted as a consultant, spokesperson on various alien-themed movies and TV shows, and now has a DVD called Indistinguishable from Magic. Nick, welcome to the program on a very difficult weekend, my friend.
Thank you, George. Yes, it is difficult, but, you know, if we don't get on with things, if life doesn't go on for the rest of us, sadly, the nuts win. So I think, you know, we, sad though it is, we have to press forward.
What's so sad? A 21-year-old, a 24-year-old, these are young people who had their entire lives and futures ahead of them. And, you know, one is dead, the other will probably get the death penalty. It makes no sense, Nick.
No, it's just a crazy world.
Well, let's escape for a couple hours if we can. And tell me about your new work, The Indistinguishable from Magic.
Well, the title, I kind of wanted to get away from the normal run-of-the-mill UFO documentaries. And the title came to me from that classic Arthur C. Clarke quote, where he said, any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic. And it set me thinking, what might extraterrestrial technology look like? And I wanted to get away from this kind of skeptic versus believer dogfight. And I wanted to get into issues such as, what might we be dealing with here? And Arthur C. Clarke was always, I guess, one of the great visionaries. And he bridged that gap, I think, between someone who was a science fiction writer, but also a scientist. So indistinguishable from magic seemed to me to be a way of maybe encapsulating what we might be dealing with here.
You are primarily a guest on many television programs, Ancient Aliens and so many others, Beyond Belief with us. This is one of your first. I mean, you've got Aliens at the Pentagon as well, but what made you decide to go into this arena?
Well, you know, I think you just kind of hit the nail on the head. I contribute to a lot of shows, and I very much enjoy that, including your own, of course. But what I always sort of think when I do those is that, you know, I'm getting, I guess, in a one-hour show when you do something like that, something like Ancient Aliens. If you do a one-hour show, you're maybe on air for, I don't know, two, three minutes tops. And so what I thought was, I wanted, instead of, I guess, having a few sound bites popping in here and there, I wanted to do something more personal, much more of a deep dive into the issues. And so that's why I thought, you know what, the only way to really do that is to make my own programs. So I kind of hooked up with Reality Entertainment and did these video-on-demand projects. Like, as you say, Aliens at the Pentagon was the first one, and now Indistinguishable from Magic. And it was just a way of, I guess, having my own say a little bit more than I would in somebody else's show. And that's no disrespect to somebody else's show, because they're all great. I don't do shows that I don't believe in and think are interesting and entertaining. But obviously, you know, doing it my own way just gives me, I guess, puts me in the driving seat, so to speak.
It sure does. Now, what's the overall premise of this one, Indistinguishable from Magic?
Well, it is. I see so many UFO shows where you will get somebody telling a story, and then oftentimes, because they feel they have to have balance, they'll have a skeptic come on, and so somebody will say, hey, here's a really interesting case. And then somebody comes on and basically pours cold water over it and says, actually, you know, that's not a very interesting case. And I sometimes think, I watch these programs, and they go round and round in circles. So I thought, why don't we just get beyond that? And instead of having that debate and saying, are we being visited? Are we alone or not? Let's just take as the start point the fact that we're not alone in the universe, and maybe that we are being visited. And then let's, in this film, let's get to the next questions. So instead of spending most of the show trying to prove a point, let's start with the assumption that it's proven, and then ask, what happens next? What will the effects be? Because I think the answer to that question is, the effects will touch every aspect of human society.
Now, the reviews have been good, but there are a lot of people out there that say you may be trying to scare the living daylights out of people.
Well, yeah, I've seen that, and I have to say, I will put my hand up and confess to you, George, that the trailers are, both for Indistinguishable from Magic and Aliens at the Pentagon, the trailers are a little bit dramatic, I will confess. And yeah, that has led to some accusations that this is kind of fear-mongering, that I'm maybe, I don't know, sort of putting the idea that we might be facing an alien invasion, all those theories that I'm still secretly working for the government. This is part of trying to usher in a new world order, uniting us against the alien threat. No, the trailers are fun. Trailers for my movies are trailers. They're like trailers for any movie you see. It's designed to get people's attention. But I think that when people watch the film, they will find that it's rather more thoughtful and even-handed than the kind of in-your-face trailers. So, yeah, I am not trying to create a new world order here, hand on heart.
Now, when we do make official first contact, and you believe that'll happen, don't you?
day will come, and ours will be the generation that sees it.
What do you
say? We'll be having this conversation at some stage, and not as a hypothetical, but you and I will be sitting down somewhere discussing those sorts of what now questions.
And what do you think the public perception will be, Nick, with that first contact? I mean, I would think that most of them would say by now, we already knew it. We believed it. But what do you think the real perception will be?
Well, I think you're right. I think if we were having this discussion back in the 50s, we would probably come to the conclusion that people would run screaming for the hills, waving their arms in the air. But nowadays, I think that for a number of reasons, and you know, shows like Coast to Coast are part of it, for a number of reasons, the actual reaction wouldn't be fear and panic. I mean, literally, unless we were facing some sort of Independence Day or War of the Worlds scenario, I think the result would be a sort of pragmatic, you see, I told you so. People would turn to their family members, their friends, their work colleagues, and say, see, exactly as I said. And it goes back to the point, you don't scare people or panic them by telling them something or revealing something that they already believe. And that, I think, is the situation that we're in.
Nick, since this has been going on for a few years, and we're getting lately now some strange military reports of encounters and things like that, like the tic-tac-toe chase with the aircraft, is that programmed or is it just happening? I don't believe in coincidences.
Well, I don't either, but I think this is an events-led scenario, and we are not necessarily the ones pulling the strings here. I mean, I think people talk, and we can get into this, people talk about disclosure, but it's almost like there's an equation, and the UFO phenomenon itself and the intelligence behind this, whatever that is, they are the sort of mysterious X in this equation, and everyone forgets that. Everyone always says, well, what do you think the government's going to do, and how are the people going to respond? But there is this third party in the equation that no one ever seems to factor in, and the point is, it might not be up to us.
Some people are concerned that we're letting the ETs know we're here. We already believe they've been here, so who cares?
Well, yeah, we've been a detectable civilization for decades because of our radio and television. So, I mean, there are always these arguments going on in radio astronomy circles and some of the conferences, and I've sat down and heard these arguments, and it gets very heated. People say, we shouldn't be advertising our presence. We shouldn't be reaching out. Listen to what Stephen Hawking said. You know, it's going to be like when Columbus met the Native Americans, only this time we're the Native Americans. The response, of course, is, it's too late. All those radio signals are out there. All those TV shows. I mean, everyone jokes about everyone watching I Love Lucy and you know, the signals going wider and further out into space. But it's all true. That's happening.
The late Philip Corso, in his book with Bill Burns, Day After Roswell, talked about alien technology. But give us some highlights, Nick, on what you think the alien technology really is and how it could benefit us.
Well, in Indistinguishable from Magic, I break that down into three categories. And I say the first thing I look at is interstellar travel itself, the technology that will one day take humanity to the stars. The second category of technology is energy. Any advanced civilization, and I'm talking about way ahead of us, is going to have energy needs way ahead of anything that we have, and we're getting pretty phenomenal down here. So that's the second. The third is the controversial one. It's weapons. And I'm not necessarily saying that we're going to find evil aliens out there, but it ties in with the second one, energy. Pretty much, if you have a high energy source, that is a weapon in and of itself, and pretty much anything can be weaponized. So those are the three broad categories. Obviously, I go into a lot more detail.
Where can people see this DVD, Indistinguishable from Magic?
Well, you can get it on Amazon, iTunes, and pretty much a whole bunch of other video on demand platforms. Also at Reality Entertainment, if you want a good old fashioned hard copy DVD. But the two big ones, I think, are Amazon and iTunes, but lots more too.
We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back with Nick Pope. Next hour, we'll take phone calls with Nick. His website linked up at coasttocoastam.com. It is nickpope.net. And when we do come back, we'll talk more about what religion might do when first contact is publicly acknowledged and how that will affect everybody. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. We're with Nick Pope. We're going to take calls with Nick next hour as we talk about his work in the field of ufology. His latest DVD is called Indistinguishable from Magic. We'll tell you again how you can watch it. Nick always does a great job. What drives you with this, Nick? Was it because of your work with the British government's UFO project for the Ministry of Defense? What pushed you into this field?
Yes, I fell into it when I was assigned that job at the Ministry of Defense while working for the British government. But after I left that job, I just felt that this was too big and too interesting and too important to walk away from. And I know this is one of my favorite sound bites, and you've probably heard it before. But as I always say, the question of are we alone or not in the universe, the related question of whether we're being visited, those are some of the biggest and most profound questions we can ask. And I always say, why wouldn't we want to try and find out the answers? And we may, with what we see going on at the moment, we may be as close as we have ever been to getting those answers.
Yeah, you believe that people, us humans, should develop some interstellar travel. Tell me about that and why. Are you concerned about something?
Well, absolutely. At the moment, we have all our eggs in one basket here on planet Earth. And, you know, whatever you believe, whether you think that the end of the world, if that's a thing, will come about through an asteroid strike, through nuclear war, through a global pandemic, through the grid going down, which I know is something that you're very knowledgeable
yep.
about. But whatever it is, we at the moment, as I say, we have all our eggs in this one basket. And at some stage in the future, whatever we believe about climate change, but even setting that aside, at some stage, the sun will grow hotter, it will expand, and basically planet Earth will be burnt to a cinder. So if we don't develop viable interstellar travel, and I'm not just talking about the moon or Mars, I'm talking about other star systems, if we don't get that technology, whether we develop it ourselves or whether we acquire it from someone else, if we don't get that, the human adventure will end here on Earth where it began. So we need, it's not just a sort of nice to have, you know, let's go out there and do some sightseeing. It's if we don't get that, we are toast.
The late physicist Stephen Hawking, much like you, felt that we needed to leave our planet if we're going to survive.
Yes, we absolutely have to. I think humanity, our destiny is in the stars, and as I say, it's not just something that would be interesting to see. It is a case of if we don't get this, we will go extinct here, and it may take a while, or it may come suddenly and unexpectedly with some great calamity. But that's why we should be working about, you know, thinking about this and working on it now.
I want to get back to the alien technology that we were talking about before the break, Nick, but let's talk about religion for a moment and what you think would happen when full knowledge is finally acknowledged that we're being visited, that there are other extraterrestrials. I think the Catholic Church is preparing us for something like this.
I think you're right. No organization lasts for 2,000 years without being pretty smart and resilient. I'm not sure I agree with some people when they say they know something. I think it might be more a question of they suspect something, or they're smart enough to cover all their bases. As I say, no institution that endures for 2,000 years is dumb. So when you listen to some of the pronouncements, and they've been saying this for about 11 years now, I think it was May April or May 2008 that the then director of the Vatican Observatory said there is no doctrinal objection to the existence of extraterrestrial life because humans may place no creative limits upon God. And clearly he would not have made such a major doctrinal statement without having top cover from the Pope. So that is the official line, that there is no doctrinal objection to this. And I think we see hints here and there of some of the other world's religions trying to sort of get ahead of the game on this, or at least make sure that if this comes, they won't be wrong-footed by it.
Do you think if people really knew about this kind of technology, alien technology, that they would demand free energy and things like that?
Well, I don't know that it will be free energy, but it may well be very, very cheap, efficient, effective energy. And I think, this is where we come back to that classic Arthur C. Clarke quote about indistinguishable from magic. And my point with this, and again, this is something I go into in the film, is that in a universe nearly 14 billion years old, we are not going to find that when we interact finally with extraterrestrial civilizations, we're not going to find that just by the laws of chance they're about 100 years ahead of us. No, in a universe 14 billion years old, we may well find we're dealing with civilizations millions of years ahead of us. And the sorts of things that they will have, whether it's starships or means of generating energy, will be, the Astronomer Royal in the UK once said that some of the concepts here, it might be like trying to explain quantum physics to chimpanzees with us as the chimpanzees.
I've always demonstrated to people who say, how did they get here? And I say, the first thing I say is they don't have our propulsion systems, believe me. I get a piece of paper, Nick, and then I put a dot on each end of it, and then I fold it where the two dots connect. And I say, that's how they're traveling. See this vast distance between the two dots? They don't travel through that. They just are there instantly. Do you think that's how they're traveling?
Yes, I think that's one of a number of different theories. I mean, the idea that you would warp space-time, again, it sounds like it's something out of science fiction, but all good science fiction has its roots in some sort of science fact, and in this case, some of the theoretical physics, and absolutely, that's the demonstration that you just described is exactly how some theoretical physicists say it would be done. I mean, it is certainly, it's not going to be the way we're doing it. I mean, people don't kind of get how vast the distances are. You will know this, but essentially, the fastest spaceship that we've ever designed, if you pointed it at the nearest star, aside from our own sun, it would take about 75,000 years to get there. So we don't just need a faster space probe. We need a whole different way of doing things. And your demonstration with its roots in theoretical physics is probably the key to this.
Well, there's a group that wants to storm Area 51 in Nevada on September 20th. They've collected almost 2 million signatures of people who claim that they're going to help storm. I have been telling folks on this program, Nick, do not go out to Area 51. That's a very secure area, and I don't want to see anybody hurt. What's your take on this?
My take is exactly the same as yours. It's very good advice. I mean, this is a bad idea on multiple levels. I mean, first of all, of course, it's easy to click going on a Facebook event. It's much harder to go. So we're not going to see 3 million people turn up. But we may well see a few thousand, and they would be much better advised, I think, to channel their energies elsewhere. I mean, just for starters, storming or in attempting to storm or inciting somebody else to storm a military facility is a federal offense. So people at the low end of the spectrum might expect arrest, a fine, a criminal record, maybe some jail time. At the high end of the spectrum, the signs around the base make it very clear. Warning, use of lethal force authorized. And for anyone who thinks that's a joke, sadly, of course, it's not. We've seen a couple of incidents actually in recent months where people have crashed their vehicles into barriers, rushed guards, and been shot. The Corpus Christi Naval Base in Texas had a case like that just in February.
Exactly.
So it's bad, bad idea to even think about this.
My colleague George Knapp, who's probably the best broadcast journalist out there covering UFOs as a news person, Nick, has interviewed Bob Lazar several times about Area 51 and truly believes there's something going on there and believes Bob Lazar's story. What's your take on Bob Lazar?
Well, you know, I think a couple of years ago I would have written it all off, and then of course it's like I was saying with the science fiction and the science fact, it's as if the science suddenly caught up with us, because the laboratory in Moscow produced for a few nanoseconds this mysterious element 115. And when they did, I think a whole bunch of people turned around and said, wait a minute, I've heard about this before. And then people checked back, and it was like, yeah, wait a minute, yeah, there was this guy, Bob Lazar, who was talking about this back in the late 80s, early 90s. So things like that certainly give one pause for thought.
It is. It does make you wonder, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And you know, essentially, I don't know the ins and outs of his story. I know there are some movies out there dealing specifically with that. But you know, it's like even if a part of that whole thing turns out to be true, and the element 115 thing is certainly spooky, then it takes you to some fairly interesting and game-changing and paradigm-busting territory.
Well, let's talk a little bit about UFOs. What's going on here? There's a Mark Walker. He's a congressman, and then there's a lawmaker. The Senator Mark Warner has met with Navy officials about UFOs. What's going on here?
Well, this is getting really interesting. Obviously, this is essentially the story of the Pentagon's ATIP program and the ongoing story of the U.S. Navy's encounter with UFOs. And these are the latest twists that we have. A number of senators who've said over the past few weeks, we have now received classified U.S. Navy briefings on this situation. And now Congressman Mark Walker has written to the Secretary of the Navy and essentially has said, what is going on? You know, we know that the U.S. Navy has confirmed that there's been this upsurge in encounters with, as they put it, UAP, unidentified aerial phenomena, which is the agreed military and intelligence community term for what the public calls UFOs. We know that the pilots and the radar operators are speaking out in increasing numbers about this. We know that the U.S. Navy have issued guidance to their pilots on what to do if they encounter these things, but the guidance remains classified, and the Navy have said they're not going to make it public. I get that, but people like Mark Walker are now saying, well, you know, enough is enough. We want some answers. And the Armed Services Committee are looking at this. The Homeland Security Committee are looking at it. The Intelligence Committee is looking at it, all in Congress.
Hey, he's a congressman, as you mentioned, out of North Carolina. Is that pretty gutsy for him to do that?
Yes, I think so. But the good news is that he's not alone with it. And now we have a number of different Congress people who have either said that they have received classified briefings on this, or that they want to have that briefing. And, of course, even the president, twice in the last few weeks, has been asked about this. And although his comments were very interesting, I think a lot of people said he was skeptical. But if you really listen to what he said, he did say in one of the interviews, there seems to be something a little bit different about what's going on right now, and we're watching.
Outside of the Barney and Betty Hill abduction case, I think the case of Travis Walton may be one of the most spectacular, Nick. Travis, of course, still with us. I love talking to him every time we're together. What do you think of that case? Fire in the sky.
Yeah, he's a great guy. He and I have spent quite a lot of time together. We often are on the same bill at various conferences. He's an interesting guy. I mean, you sit down opposite him and you talk to him, and he's still got, after all these years, that haunted, hunted look in his eyes, which is the same look that you see in people often who've had some sort of post-traumatic stress disorder. And even though he's talking about something now that happened years ago, when he talks about it, you can sort of see him slide back into the zone. And it's not necessarily comfortable listening to him do that.
Well, he and his logger buddies, who were witnesses to that case, all passed lie detector tests.
Yeah, and these are pretty tough guys. I mean, I don't know if people who haven't lived that life or met those sorts of people realize just how sort of tough and strong physically and mentally you have to be to do that sort of thing. These are not people who scare easily, and yet something affected these people deeply and profoundly.
If and when the visitation becomes truly public, I want you to speculate on this, how do you think it'll happen? Will we see something? Will there be that ship on the White House lawn? What do you think will happen?
Well, I think it could go one of any number of different ways. We might have some great event like that, the archetypal landing on the White House lawn, some ships just hanging in the sky like something from a sci-fi movie. Or, and I know that this isn't necessarily popular with some people in the UFO community, but it might come through science and through radio astronomy, and it may be something like the SETI Institute, but we've seen it in movies like Contact. It might be the picking up of a signal from another civilization. The next generation of radio telescopes are going to be so powerful that they'd be capable of detecting a signal equivalent in power output to something like an airport radar out to a distance of 50 light years. So in other words, if there are other civilizations out in our small corner of the Milky Way galaxy, the next generation of radio telescopes, things like the Square Kilometer Array, will find them.
You know, that video of what looks like a UFO coming into our airspace, our atmosphere, and then it looks like we've fired off a missile from somewhere. Do you think that's what happened?
Well, if it is, it was a pretty dumb move.
Yes.
I go back to the point, indistinguishable from magic. It's like if you show, I don't know, somebody from the Stone Age a cell phone, they will see it as a shiny rock. If we think that we can, you know, because we've watched a couple of sci-fi movies where we've turned the tables on the aliens, if we think that we could somehow turn back the tide of an invasion against a civilization with a million years plus head start on us, you know, think again. I think our only response in that situation would be to sit down and talk and to try to communicate and things. Because if we ever got in a fight with something like that, it's not going to be like bows and arrows against stealth.
No, it's not going to be pretty. Nick, stay with us. We're going to come back in a moment. We'll continue chatting about your work, Indistinguishable from Magic, and we'll take phone calls next hour with Nick Pope right here on Coast to Coast AM.